Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Harmonious World. My name is Hilary Seabrook, and for this episode I'm delighted to be joined by sax player David Bixler. David lives in New York and he's worked with some of the greats of jazz around the world, really, not just in America. So Lionel Hampton, Toshiko Akiyoshi, and he joined the Chico O'Farrell Afro-Cuban Big Band. And some months ago, a couple of years ago actually, I interviewed Arturo O'Farrell, Chico O'Farrell's son. And what you're listening to right now is part of Liars, which is taken from David Bixler's latest album, The Langston Hughes Project, Volume 1. And we'll talk about why it's Volume 1, I think, later on. Anyway, I'm looking forward to having a conversation with David, and I hope you enjoy listening in. Thank you for joining me on Harmonious World.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It definitely is. I had spoken with Freddie Bryant, and he said he really enjoyed his time speaking with you a while back. Yeah.
Excellent. And I also interviewed Arturo O'Farrell.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was way back. I think that might have been early 2021, you know, a long time ago.
Okay. In the thick of the pandemic.
Absolutely. But Freddie Bryant was lovely. It was really good talking to him.
Yeah. That's a cool project. He's a good friend and a great musician.
And of course, that's linked in a way to this Langston Hughes thing that you've done, because it's, you know, he was a real part of Harlem and New York.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely was. And, you know, I learned a lot about him. My mother is she was an English teacher. And early in my time in New York, I moved to New York in the late 80s, you know, during a rough stretch. She sent me a copy of his poem "Mother to Son," which is an iconic poem. You know, I've kind of likened it to Kind of Blue. You know, if a person has one jazz record in their collection, it's often Kind of Blue, and you know, there's a reason for it. Not to diminish it, but it's, you know, very accessible and very much, you know, has hit the population in general. And "Mother to Son" is like that. And that was my introduction to. To his work, and you know, very meaningful. You know, like going through a hard time, my mother gave it to me, and it was, you know, that she liked. But anyhow, it opened up a door to you know, his writing, and you know, eventually his life. And you know, I just found myself drawn in. I liked you know, his vantage point of life. You know, it really spoke to me. And, you know, with this project, you know, eventually when I got to the poems, he's, you know, often, you know, if you look him up online, you know, Langston Hughes, jazz poet. And I avoided all his quote unquote jazz poetry and kind of tried to focus on poems that I felt, you know, dealt with, you know, things that, you know, touched all of humanity and, you know, not just, you know, Black Americans, but, you know, the things that we all go through in this life, you know, obviously, you know, he was writing to and about a, you know, what he knew, but I think a lot of it transcends, and it's just, you know, what we experience going through life. And that really spoke to me, and I wanted to highlight that and, you know, do what, you know, we do as musicians and, create based on what is influencing us.
How many of the poems did you choose?
I chose eight of them, and I was able to record four of them. I'm hope this is the Langston Hughes Project Volume 1, and we are hoping, well, at least I am, I don't know how much I can expand the we, to Volume 2 to be done soon. It's quite an undertaking. Music's rather kind of difficult, involves rehearsal, and it also involves 9 people. So coordinating all that is a little bit of a logistical hurdle, not insurmountable, and I will do it is my goal. I can't predict the future, but that's definitely on the to-do list.
Right. So tell me about so how much of it is composed? How much of it is improvised? How much of it is devised in the rehearsal studio?
Okay. The majority of the music is composed. I get on Moan, the blues, there's a couple solos, but each piece basically features one soloist. And, I really took time to try to deal with the string quartet in, like with a lot of integrity, not just background, but, thinking of them as a unit and like, how can I really utilize what they're capable of, which, was as a jazz saxophonist was a kind of a new thing for me, but also using different combinations of the string quartet with the instruments of the jazz quintet, and not having them be like completely separate or using the strings as background pads only. So that was really important to me. That's what I was really focused in on during this time of writing the music.
Great. Can you just explain something before we go on? So there are 5 tracks. Mm-hmm. So there's the 40 minutes of the whole project, and then there are the 4 tracks. So are so Justice, Liars, End, and Moan, they're the 4 tracks. And so am I correct in thinking that the Langston Hughes Project Volume 1 long track is the 4 of those together?
Yes. Yeah, and that was a friend of mine, just a really talented electroacoustic composer, like sound artist, Eleni Lilios. She took my 4 tracks and put them in her blender and, created these soundscapes, which, I'm in love with these things. I think they're great. And so she linked she laid them in between. So there's 3 interludes and laid them in between the 4 tracks to make one continuous piece. And I improvised old soundscapes. And then after the fact, she played with my sound electronically a little bit. Originally she didn't want to do it, but then she thought that it was a little out of character compared to the background. And, neophyte as far as electroacoustic music, I just went with her suggestion and I'm really happy with it. It was really fun to do something I've never done before.
Right. So there are sort of 2 different ways of listening to this in a way. You can listen to that version, which has got the interludes, or you can listen to the 4 tracks separately.
Exactly. And I think the idea that I got from, the publicist and Tiger Turn, the label, was that not everyone is in the frame of mind to sit down and listen to a 40-minute piece of music, which I get. And, they were originally constructed as standalone pieces, and I think they stand as standalone pieces. But I think the continuous track is a cool sonic experience.
It really is. I got lost in it. I got completely absorbed into it. It was really mesmerizing.
Okay. Mission accomplished. Yes. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I like the fact that there's a traditional, if you like, in the jazz way, but then there's other bits of it that are new and that kind of are surprising all of a sudden in it.
Well, that's encouraging. It was funny. There were several reviews, and they were all European, that made a Mingus analogy, which, I've always loved Mingus, but I've never thought that about my music. And, I'm honored to that was evoked in music. So I mean, I'm coming out of a, when I was younger, like a bebop tradition. That's how I learned how to play, and have been slowly pointing to the left, as time has gone on. So I, you don't abandon, the stuff that's at the foundation. You it's additive, I hopefully, or it is, it combines to make something new. So I'm glad to hear that you can, hear the tradition, because that's very important to me. But I also, I mean, there's a lot of music that I like, and a lot of music that invite to influence what I do. And then, like with the electroacoustic thing, I hope this is the first of many things. I don't want to abandon, just playing tunes, with my friends. But, I really like this as a sonic option for sure.
That's brilliant. So when did you when was this project conceived and recorded?
Well, it was probably conceived. I mean, the idea to do it, maybe in the, like 2010. When I actually got started in earnest was 2016, and it was actually performed once, in its entirety, minus the electronics. All eight pieces were in one concert. That was the only time we performed, and then it took me a while to record. I was kind of, music was a little bit on the back burner of for me for a while. We I have a son that had some health issues, and that kind of put a governor on. I didn't stop playing, but my jazz addiction was not as imperative as it had been in a time of my life. So I kind of, like, it's like 6 or 7 years where I didn't do a recording, and I still gig and stuff, but we just had different priorities. And then in 2018, I decided, okay, man, this is life. I guess I was kind of waiting for it to get back to where it was, and it was where it actually was. And so I moved forward from that, and did a couple of recordings, one with a quartet with John Coward, Rogerio Boccato, and Ike Stern. And then also with the same Nonet, a record called Blended Lineage. And we actually went into the studio at the same time. Blended Lineage was done first because the music was easier to knock out. But I was only able to do half of the Hughes project. And then that was right before pandemic. And then pandemic happened. And then it was like a year later that I was able to bring the strings into the studio. And then, I mean, as life just happens, and you think you're in control, but you're not. And then the electronic thing took a while, because I approached her and she was completely into it, but her docket was full, so I had to wait. And I think it was worth waiting, because I was ready to, like, pull the trigger on this, like a year came out, but waited for the electronics. And then once she did that, which took some time and some, like, back and forth, because she played me different options of what could happen, I went into the studio and improvised over it. Which, it was funny, because like, I had booked a few hours with an engineer, the guy, and kind of everything was like one take, and I was like thinking, man, something must be wrong, because it shouldn't be this easy. But it felt so comfortable. And but we did that, and that was sometime last year, I can't remember. And then, with all the process, just like releasing it and stuff, it took until January. So this is where we sit right now. So it was a bit of an arduous process, and hopefully volume two will be a little more streamlined.
But I'm sure volume two will be something of a development. Of an evolution.
I think so. And I definitely, I can't envision this without the electronic component, to balance. I think it would be kind of symmetrical. If it wasn't.
Because I think that, if we look back to Langston Hughes, 60, 70, 80 years ago, whenever, and look at how the music industry has changed, how music composition has changed with technology and all of those sort of things. And I think there's a sort of a nod in the direction of music that Langston Hughes would have been familiar with. And then there's also this taking it into the future in the technology, the electronics. And I really love the use of electronics with the acoustic, you know, with the alto sax, with that. I think that's just a beautiful combination.
That's an interesting insight about, you know, paying respect to the music that, you know, of his time, again, going to the tradition and to the future. And I didn't think of it like purposefully, I'm going to do this, you know, that just kind of was the process and what came out. And, so I'm glad it landed well with you in that way.
Oh, definitely. So tell me a little bit about your background.
I am originally from Wisconsin. I grew up outside of Milwaukee and went to school at Indiana University and studied music there at a very fertile time. A lot of my classmates are, out there doing things now, still. So it was a good time to be there. Here, an eye-opening time and a time of learning. And then to New York right after graduation and been there since, a lot of years. And that's where I come from. I started, my parents were musicians, but my mother had a saxophone. And so, fifth grade is when band programs start. So when band came, there was no question what instrument I was going to play because there was already a saxophone to be had, right? That didn't have to be purchased. And, I think sometimes things are meant to be,
Yeah, and you've played with some big names, haven't you?
Yeah, it's jazz. You mentioned I had a long stint with Turow and his father's band, which was, just great. I mean, like Artie's a long time friend, and I appreciate seeing the due success that he's gotten, for sure. And but going into that world, I got just a random phone call on a Sunday afternoon. Can you go play with Chico Farrell's band? They're starting up at Birdland. And I knew the name Chico Farrell, but I didn't really know much about the music. And I got down there, and the rhythm section was the heaviest guys in the music, and I had no clue what was going on. I was just like, hey, can someone tell me where beat one is, please? And it changed how I thought about music, because I think as great as jazz education is, I'm an educator myself, the rhythmic kind of really gets the short end of the stick in what is discussed. And this turned it around, because this music's all about rhythm, and the notes are almost secondary. I mean, you function, rhythmically as a saxophonist, which is not what I was, had done really in a big band. It just really changed how I heard music and what I valued in music. I thank God for that experience, man, because that it was cool. It was, one of the main things in my life that affected my, my perception of music, especially, as a professional.
Right.
And the other one would be, I did like later in life, I went back to school to get a master's degree, but I did a composition, not jazz composition. And, I thought I knew composition was like going in there. And, like my teacher was like, yeah, some nice little chord changes and melodies. And it was basically a do-over. You need those in order to,
Arturo Farrell at Birdland, the Sunday lunchtime thing. I mean, that's on my bucket list. Go to Birdland for Sunday lunchtime. It's one of the things I want to do at some point.
It's great. I mean, the band's great, music's great. He's good people. Yeah,
absolutely. So, what's next then? So, volume 2 of this would be nice to come out soon, sometime.
I'm actually in Wisconsin right now. I did start last night at University of Wisconsin Stevens Point and did some master classes this morning. I'm on to Madison tomorrow to do the same thing, and then Milwaukee to play at the Jazz Heritage Festival. And then I'll go back to New York on Sunday, and then Tuesday, my group Trio Incognito is headed to Montana. I was fortunate enough to get a jazz road grant to, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's through South Arts, an organization in Georgia, and they underwrite tours. There's an application process, and to basically to underserved jazz communities. So we're going to Montana for a week, and then down to Oklahoma, gig in Dallas. But we'll be gone for 2 weeks. I'm really excited about that with the trio. Other like I had two pandemic projects. One was that when we couldn't play anymore. All gigs for everyone canceled. Started going out to the parks and playing. And since there's no grand pianos in Prospect Park or Central Park, there's a lot action going, and that's not something I had done before. Maybe a one-off thing, but not on a regular basis. So we actually made a recording. I have a second one in the can, which will be coming out soon. But I enjoy playing with these guys, Dan Loomis, the bassist, and Fabio, I'd say Venezuelan drummer. Fabio is actually on the Langston Hughes project. But actually, my next record, I did another recording with the same band as In the Face of Chaos, which was my first recording. It's like the entry into music, and that's with John Coward. You might know from Bryant Blade Fellowship and
Yeah.
Ike Sturm on bass and Rogerio Boccato. And it's called Beatitude, and it's inspired by the Beatitudes. And
Right.
that's coming out the end of April, also Tiger Term. So
Fantastic.
that's
So,
kind of
yeah, so there's lots that people
that's
can
what's
get
coming
hold
up for
of.
me now.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, I will put links in the show notes and things so that people can listen to more of your stuff and as it comes out,
Oh,
hear
that's great. I
more.
appreciate that.
That's okay. And I'm going to play some bits of the track.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I mean I don't like taking kind of extracts of music because I think people should listen to the whole thing, but actually at least they can get some idea of what the music's like. And I really love this album. I think it's a great album.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, you're a saxophonist
Yeah. Mainly
yourself.
baritone. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. And what kind of stuff do you like to do?
Well, I'm working on a thing at the moment actually with some electronics. So I'm working with
Oh,
a
cool.
with a trumpeter. So it's a sort of Jerry Mulligan, Chet Baker, but lifted into today, really.
That's super cool. I look forward to hearing it. You have to let me know when that
I
drops.
will. Yeah, for sure. Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me, David. I really appreciate your time.
Hillary, my pleasure. I'm thank you for your generosity, and thank you for your whole project. I mean, just reading kind of like your backstory, the impetus of how it started, that's very generous. And also the thing that I thought was cool when they approached me about this, I was looking at your guests, and it's like it's cool to get out of the jazz thing. So you kind of like
Yeah.
you have equal space. You're a fair trade podcast, right?
Absolutely. I just, obviously this is named after a Quincy Jones quote, which is about what I imagine what a harmonious world it would be if we all shared what we're good at. But another Quincy Jones quote is there's the only type of music I don't like is bad music. So, it's that's the thing. If it's good music, whatever genre it is, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
thank you for doing that and allowing me to be part of it for sure.
Great. Lovely. Thanks so much for talking to me. And say hello to Freddie Bryant when you see him.
I will do that indeed. All right. Take care, Hillary.
And
Bye.
you. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to that conversation with David Bixler. At the start, I played an extract from Liars, which is track 3 on this album. And now you're listening to some of Moan. I hope you enjoy listening to this and follow the links in the show notes so that you can hear some more. Meanwhile, I hope you have a very, very good week. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Harmonious World. My name is Hilary Seabrook, and it's a great delight to bring this series of discussions with musicians and composers and writers and all sorts of people to you. Obviously, there's no point in having a podcast if people aren't listening, and I'm very grateful to my listeners for doing so. Thanks also to Joe English for composing and performing this new theme tune. So wherever you get your podcast, you can leave a review. You can share this with your friends and family, either as a link or on social media and that sort of thing. I'd be really grateful for that. Don't forget that you can subscribe now. There's a link wherever you get your podcasts. So have a great week, and please remember why I started this, which is just to try and make the world a little more harmonious. Thanks for listening to Harmonious World.